the Volunteer Firefighter Podcast. My name is Scott. I'm with Ash and Scott and Todd. I'm not even going to call you my fire friends anymore. We're trying something new tonight. We got a different sound system set up. We're slowly getting more progressive, I guess.
Yeah, we're not sure if it's better.
We're going to find out if it's better or not. We're trying something out. Tonight we're going to basically chat about what we've been doing for the last week. What's up? What are you laughing at?
I mean, Todd and I were both trying to unmute Todd.
No. There we go. I'm back. So it got a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Escalated quickly. I didn't honestly think this, but I thought in our region, the OCS fire was going to be our fire. That was wrong. So I guess what we'll do is we'll break down what's happening in our region. It was already the worst wildfire season in BC history. And then it turned much worse. Multiple structures lost. Not so bad in our area. I don't know, if there's any count in our area yet. But up in Kelowna, West Kelowna, there's a little bit of a count already happened.
Yeah.
Nothing official. This is all just news stuff we're getting from the news, not any inside information that we have.
Reports, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess to start off with, finish off the Osseous fire. There was a few other fires kind of burning around. One was called there's actually two up above, just above Karamias.
Yes.
Which is just to the west of Osseous.
Right.
Those two had started probably around the same time as the Osseous fire, correct?
I believe so. I don't remember the exact dates, but it was pretty close to it.
Yeah. And they just kind of sat up in the top of the mountain for a good month.
Yeah.
And then we had some really hot weather, heavy winds, and those fires erupted pretty big. They actually combined into one bigger fire, and that was called the Crater Creek Fire.
Yeah.
And it came ripping down this valley, which is known as the Ashinola.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're going to start. We're not going to talk about too much of what we did until the next time. It's going to be a few parts. We're just going to kind of talk about the different fires and how they kind of progressed. So I guess the Crater Creek fire came in. It was coming down into the valley. We found out there was a bunch of units going to assist the Caribbean Fire Department.
Yes.
And then finally we got passed out just tender. It was myself and Mike went.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out, just did some hall standby, but from what I was hearing from the crews that were out there, it was definitely coming down the valley, pretty heavy on top of them. One of our briefings in the morning by somebody was, the Ashinola is now nuked. So I was like, oh, that sounds bad.
And to put that into perspective, so the Ashinola Valley, is very, very vertical. There's the river, pretty dangerous river actually that rips through the base of it. Super vertical on each side, one road in, one road out. There's no major residential properties up there. Once you actually hit the true Ashinola Valley, there is way at the top, there is a lodge, which I don't know whatever happened to that.
They actually survived there.
Cathedral Lake Lodge, the Peace Forest Service showed a photo the other day.
Yes.
They had it well sprinkled with the lake right there, and the fire burnt up right around the whole perimeter of it.
Right.
But they saved the whole lodge and all the outbuildings and cabins.
As I was saying that, I'm like, is that the one that I saw? Because there's been a few of these lodges that are way out the back. So that is right. So that lodge was saved. Kind of as you drop down the valley, there are a few private cabins on each side of the valley. But for the most part, it was all recreational camping. There is a little bit of private up there, but for the most part, until you drop right down to the valley bottom, there's no residential. But there is a pretty decent community size right at the bottom there. So
right, that's right.
I think that was their major concern, is once those winds picked up, which that part of the province is so windy, and they get winds, and one second it's north, east, west, it doesn't matter. Winds are always gusting there.
Yeah.
So that was the major concern.
Yeah, so that's kind of where we came into play, I guess, that night. Next morning, we were kind of We came home. We got a what's known as a drawdown from forestry to go somewhere else, to go to actually that fire the next day. Mm-hmm. So we were ready to go. Around that same time, and I can't remember how long there was a small fire burning in West Kelowna at the time.
That's right.
And it had been burning for a few days. Mm-hmm. And again, that same kind of weather system, hot weather, lots of wind, was had pushed through the valley, and it made this what's it called, the McDougal Creek fire. It started getting bigger, and we started hearing, "Oh, this fire is getting bigger, and they're now calling for more resources." And it sounded like it was going to be something. We didn't know what it was going to be. It sounded like it was going to be something.
Yeah.
So was it Thursday night? I think it was around Thursday night. We were out at the other fire now.
Yes.
Kind of did some patrols, making sure it wasn't going to jump over. It was a lot of, I'm not going to get too far, but you know, we were doing a lot of like, kind of public safety talks and things like that. And we started hearing about this other fire, and Kelowna was getting much bigger. And by, I want to say, was it Thursday evening late, we started hearing reports about it coming over. Now it was starting to take structures out. The winds were so heavy that it actually, that the lake there, I want to say that lake's about a mile or a kilometer wide.
It's it's a pretty wide lake. I mean, it's very long, Okanagan Lake. Yeah. But yeah, it's a pretty wide stretch there as well. So the fire was pushing downhill kind of north as well, northeast. With those winds right into West Kelowna and started pushing down towards a lot of the residences down that to the highway. And then that's when a spot fire jumped the lake and started that evening in Kelowna in the Clifton Heights area.
Which I don't think anyone, I mean, we've seen spot fires jump a long way.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone watching, especially like people that aren't firefighters, they had no idea that was the thing that could happen.
Yeah. I think when I read, they said where it jumped was just shy of a kilometer and a half from fire to where the spot fire happened. Mm. I mean, that's not unheard of.
Yeah.
But it's just thinking like, okay, this jumped an entire lake.
Yeah.
And then spot fired. So, and again, West Kelowna, there's one bridge and there's already so many resources on that side of the valley.
Yeah.
And like, they're throwing a lot of resources at it, pretty heavy, because it's, as it came down that side, there's a lot of intermixed homes there. They're like spread around. There's no major, like it was the outlying structures that were starting to get lost and it was working its way down towards some like thicker, you know, some like thicker dense population, I guess. So they're starting to throw more and more and more resources at it. And then, yeah, it gets down to the bottom. It jumps the lake. And now you've got heavy resource on the one side of the lake. Everything's going to come across the Bennett Bridge, which is a shit show at the best of times. They basically ended up shutting down traffic. Like they shut the highway down at one point and got resources back across the highway. We're calling them for extra resources. So that turned into like a whole separate incident.
And actually at first I thought, maybe it wasn't a spot fire. Maybe just some idiots were watching the fire and then somehow lit the fire. But then there was another spot fire that jumped in Lake Country.
Yeah,
right. So that all happened kind of the same time.
Yeah, and during all this, there's thousands of people trying to evacuate under the sudden order. They started doing tactical evacuations, but then they came into that evacuation order pretty quickly. And, yeah, traffic, chaos, right? Everybody's trying to get out.
Because, of course, everybody from West Kelowna is trying to go to Kelowna proper. That's where the evacuation centers are all set up.
Yeah.
One set up in the arena, which is right near where the fire jumps, too. So, you know, couldn't even imagine what traffic. Yeah, like you said, traffic is the worst on a regular day, but couldn't imagine what it looks like when that's going on.
For sure.
So now there's in that one area, pretty big population of what I want to say in the whole area, probably 200,000 people.
About that, for sure. Yeah,
within the whole area, three pretty substantial fires, which are all hitting intermix interface.
Yeah,
not just out in the open ground, and they're like they start taking structures. So while this is going on, so this is now, and we'll talk about some of the firefighting that's happening, but there's also another fire up in Adams Lake.
Yep.
But so that's up in the Shuswap, which is a couple hundred kilometers away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's merged into a few, because there was two, I think, burning. It's merged into one big one.
Yes, it's a huge complex fire now as well. So it's Adams Lake, Shuswap Lake, I think, like they call it Little or Upper or Lower or something like that. And then into Scotch Creek.
Yeah, it's the Bush Complex fire now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's coming down. It's taken out, again, cottages. And it had been burning for a while again. And then it was taking out, like, cottages and stuff that are out there, because it's kind of like lake. Like, it's like a lake out there. Kind of vacation homes and stuff. And then it actually starts getting into the Scotch Creek proper, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember the timeline on that, but at one point it actually wipes up the fire hall. Which we know those guys because they come to our seminar.
Yeah.
And it was like rank 5 at the only bridge out of town. So, which that bridge held because they put sprinklers all over it, but they couldn't get through because of obviously fire burning through the bridge, through the, it must have been a canyon that's burning through.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of people are stuck there. People are swimming out, getting picked up by boats, which is also happening in West Kelowna.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so, there's a lot of people that scattered down the lake. They had no way out.
Yeah.
And then boats were rescuing a lot of people.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we get another fire. Yeah. So now it's Friday morning, and we're not only on.
That's right.
We're on the fire, on the Crater Creek fire, with our tender, north of Sarah, with our engine. Now, because it's an engine now, yeah. So we're there with an engine, four guys, doing our thing, and we get notified there's a structure on fire in a place, Willowbrook, just above us.
Yeah.
Not due to wildfire, just a structure fire.
Yeah.
But it's in an intermixed area.
That's right. And the only reason that we got
that notification was
the info on that. So we were tasked out from BC Wildfire to be on
initial attack
and overnight initial attack crew. So they had enough manpower on standby for an IA crew during the day. But basically from 7 to 7, like 7 at night, overnight, they had us in our bush truck as a crew of 3. So myself and 2 other members were tasked to initial attack for the evening time. And one of the guys that was on it with me, his girlfriend lives up in Twin Lakes, Willowbrook. And he messages me pretty early in the morning. He's like, holy crap, like her neighbor's house is on fire. And he's getting like pictures. And like, we're just on the tail end of our ops period. So I'm like, yeah, go ahead. Like, he's like, I gotta get up there. Like, we're gonna start grabbing some of the gear, some of the animals, like, get them out of the way just in case. I'm like, yeah, there's only an hour left. I can always find somebody if we get tasked out in, you know, the next hour. So he races up there and sure shit, like, fully involved structure fire, getting up into some of the canopy around them, starts to spot fire, and now this is turning into wildfire.
Yeah, so now in a fairly short length of time, within like, what, 2 days?
Yeah.
We have Crater Creek, which is like, I think now it's mapped at 44,000 hectares or something.
Yeah, right.
At the time, I think it was 20,000. Mm-hmm. We got this thing burning in Willowbrook, which is 1,000. We got the thing in West Kelowna, which is, I forget how big that is. That wasn't big in forestry, it was more big in just number of houses.
Mm-hmm.
Because even a small intermixed fire could cause a lot of devastation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, it doesn't really matter the hectare size once it gets into the houses. It's good to take.
Yeah.
Like, burn through all those houses. And then we have the one across the lake, Kelowna proper, and then we have the one in Lake Country, and then we have the one in Adams Lake area.
Yeah.
Not to mention multiple other fires around the province.
Yes.
That's still burning. So, mm-hmm. Pretty quickly, all the resources are tapped. General pages are going out for, like, it was a weird, like, I said to Kevin the night before, he said, well, because I said, oh, well, they could just do a general page for all of us, like, for any available apparatus. He goes, that can never happen. How is that going to work? Mm-hmm. And because I'd never seen it before, never. Yeah. And I said, that might be able to work. Well, and then Friday, that's what happened. General page for any available apparatus in the entire region. To go help in Kelowna, and that ended up being everywhere up there.
Yeah, that was crazy. So just before 1 o'clock Friday, mm-hmm. That's when those general pages came out to all of our halls. And yeah, I remember hearing it. It was it's any and all apparatus and personnel to report to Kelowna for task force for interface fire.
Yeah.
And then during the phone calls dispatch, some departments got tasked to Willowbrook. And then we got tasked to Kelowna and Lake Country.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird how that all came in. Like, again, like that, I don't know if that would ever happen. That's weird. Oh, any and all personnel. So, like, one's old spidey senses can get tingly. And, like, I was already pretty wiped out from, like, pretty busy couple weeks and blah, blah, blah. So, I've got substantial amount of help. Holiday time banked up, and I'm like, I am about going to take this. So Friday, I did not work. So I come down here, I'm just kind of beetling around the hall, getting, you know, making sure things are prepped, and, you know, knowing that, like, we're basically getting surrounded by wildfire. Like, not, like, physically right around our town, but everywhere within the valley, like, there's something going off. I'm like, if it's not here, we're about to get asked for help. And then the ask does come in, but it says to phone this number and go and respond to Kelowna. But we already know what's happening up in Willowbrook. So we end up reaching out to the chief and say, hey, like, we're about to send a crew to the north. Do you need more help? If you say no, we're going to help at the north. If you say yes, you better request it because we're going to go. And the chief's like, no, like, we're already asking for help. Like, we're going to need help. So sure shit, we phoned that number. And we got retasked at that point to Willowbrook.
Yeah.
So that all starts to happen. And then the page comes in for Willowbrook. And we sent up a truck. We sent a crew right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the same thing, our neighboring department, Anarchist, they got the same journal page. They sent another engine out to Willowbrook. And they were just ahead of us. They were turning off through Oliver towards Willowbrook when we deployed. So we deployed two engines and a tender up to Kelowna. And same thing. So we kind of knew what was happening in Willowbrook. So our deputy chief called and to clarify, are we going to Willowbrook or are we going to Kelowna? What's the biggest need here? And at that time, that's when they told us, no, we're going to Kelowna. The other resources are going to Willowbrook. So we hit the road with two engines and a tender, and away we went.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. All of these fires are still active. So this all started
last week.
However long ago. Basically a week ago. Like, they didn't start, but they kind of became a threat.
Yeah.
Which I think is something kind of interesting to talk about, because I'm seeing a ton of this stuff on Facebook. Like, all of the conspiracy theorists decided to take off their tinfoil hats and slap a couple of bars on their shoulders, and they're all fire chiefs now.
Facebook experts.
Oh man, it's out of control. So I seen this one post, and there's this guy trying to tap a fire hydrant, and he's like, "Yep, these guys are trying to burn us all out. There's no water coming from this water hydrant," he says. And, like, right away, somebody below it.
So did you just take the cap off?
No, like, they actually opened it. Oh, okay. And, like, nothing was happening. The person below is like, hey, like, there's 1,000. Like, man, fucking government. And then one person's like, yeah, I was working that fire. Like, the pump station burned. Like, everything burned. There's no power. It's like, these things just don't, like, make pressure. Like, because of, like, fairies that make pressure on our fire truck when Scott drives. There's your pump stations that supply power and water pressure from, you know, like, it's an entire infrastructure grid that makes this happen. And when that grid goes out, you have no pressurized water.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, oh, I know, you're part of the problem. And I go, Christ. So all that's happening now. And then the other side of it is, like, why didn't they just go action these fires
sooner,
yeah. Right? And, like, that's a valid question. So why don't you do it? And, like, even, like, some of the guys here, like we were just chatting, right? You know, like, you kind of have to look at it black and white. Like, so it's just like any sort of triage. when you look at, hey, there's this fire burning way up the Cathedral Mountains, which is by the Ashenola, where that one started.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just doing its thing. And, like, we're so good. Again, we're so good at firefighting in BC and, like, everywhere that, like,
it's caught up to us because that's what the problem is.
So now the problem is, like, we put these fires out. We don't allow them to clean the fuels.
Yeah.
So we've got so much fuel out there
that
once it starts rocking, now it's a challenge, right?
Yeah.
So when there's all of these other fires in the valley and in the province, like, say, Transwest, right next door here, one of their chopper pilots, like, they've been working nonstop since early spring, but they've been away from home because there's all these other threats. So all of this air support's been working. It's just not here. And up on Ashenola, a lot of these other, like the West Kelowna fire, it's not somewhere that you can just drive a fire truck to, right? Like, it's going to be air support. You're going to have to heli in a crew.
And then you got to get a crew.
And then you have to have a crew. So when they're all working other places where there's, like, threat to structure, like, that's just going to be triage. You have to put your resources there.
Yeah.
If we had billions of dollars in money and equipment and manpower, and there was just helicopters and aircraft lined up, waiting to go, great, but we don't have that. Like, it's just not feasible until this kind of a situation happens. And then the big alert, or the they activate the emergency act or whatever, and now the floodgates of everything open. So they're throwing everything at it. We're getting resources from the U.S. still. We're getting resources from across the province, from across our neighboring provinces. So it's great. So we are getting a ton of people here, but how can you say, I'm going to go action this fire way out where it's not near anything?
Yeah. Well, and like one of our guys was saying, is like, this is the fire when we were on that Crater Creek after the first night or whatever, we were just watching it, right? And it's encroaching on the mountain.
Yeah.
Burning isn't slow because now the weather system is kind of gone. It's got a little chillier. So we're watching it burn slowly down the mountain, the smoke's sitting just low.
Mm.
You know, and we're like, this is perfect. This is what it should be doing. It should be burning off that undergrowth, not like every once in a while a tree would candle. It wasn't like ripping. It was doing its thing, which is what it's cleaning out the forest. It's actually, that was part of our job the one day. We just drive around and talk to the people that were, you know, they were on alert. They ended up going on an order to get out. But while we were talking to them, you know, I had the weather kestrel out and I was explaining to them all the kind of the ins and outs. And I was just saying, you know, like, no reason to panic because, you know, of course they're all worried because they know what's going to happen in Kelowna. And it's like, you know, this is totally different weather here right now. And it's calm right now. But yeah, everyone wants to, well, I was in action sooner. Well, then you'd be like, why are you putting those fires out too quick? So then there'd always be someone, oh, we're spending too much money on these wildfires. No, like, because in the end, what happens with that, like, the only reason why we can gather this much resources is because now it becomes structural protection.
Yes.
Yeah. So when it's burning up in the forest, it's not, like you said, we can't do anything about it because we can't go up there with our engines. We have to wait for it to burn down to where their homes are.
Yep.
And then we set up sprinklers and we set up trucks and we do our best to defend all the homes.
And there was a ton of apparatus and a ton of resources up in West Kelowna and Kelowna and Lake Country, locally. And then everybody else started to muster, coming from the coast and coming from the island and everywhere else, northern area again. But it takes them a while to drive here. Some rigs are getting trucked on deck trucks to hit here as well. And then the aircraft, like for Friday when we were up there, nothing was flying because the smoke was so thick.
Yeah.
They couldn't fly. Yeah. So they have to go by the national standard, which is a kilometer of visual, and they didn't have it. It was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing was flying. But when they could, everything was flying. Like, there's even a picture kicking around on the Facebooks and the TikToks there of one of our BC ambulance choppers with a bucket attached.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And somebody said, and of course, all the Facebook experts are piping up, oh, that's a good use of resources, taking away our helicopter. Like, well, we have a few of them, and if they're not being tasked on medevac, if they're on standby or whatever, and that's now Provincial Emergency Act, they're going to be used, which they were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and the chiefs in these areas can't pull the trigger too fast, can't hit the emergency button too fast because, like you said, it takes a long time for our apparatus to get to get from like on north end of BC.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we sent a truck out later and now they're still there. It took them 4.5 hours to get where they needed to go.
Yeah.
Just to get to the staging area before they even got tasked. Mm-hmm. So if the chiefs in these areas or the forestry guys hit the emergency button too fast and call too many resources at once, well, now they're draining it for the rest of the province.
Yeah.
So they almost have to wait until, okay, now we're in the middle of it. Okay, call now. Like, we need everybody now.
And, you know, it's a fine line, like, in that initial phase on Friday there when that all call went out. You know, so we got up to Kelowna, and there was only a handful of trucks at Hall 1. Mm-hmm. So it took us a little bit to get our tasking, and then we went off to West Kelowna, helped them for a bit, then came back, and then we got redeployed to the north, and we're in Lake Country for the rest of the night. And when we got there, we ran into Chief Darren Lee at Hall 71, and right away, like, another engine from Penticton rolled in. So we had our safety briefing, headed out to the area of operation, and met up with another little mini tender or mini engine. And there was already another task force there, but all these guys are timing out at 36 hours, like, sure, insane amount of hours worked. So they had to go back. So then now we're up and running. And, you know, that whole night we were running with the four trucks, and that was it. Mm-hmm. And we were busy. It was nonstop. And we ended up pulling a 28 hour shift ourselves.
Yeah, that's so crazy, right?
It was a long haul. But everywhere we went, we were actioning fire.
Yeah. You know, to top that all off, then of course we had one of our busier weeks too here.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually thinking, oh, this is the calls, and then all of a sudden we got structure fire.
Yep.
On one day. Mm-hmm. Which you guys actually, like, I was actually on deployment at the time, so I kind of heard it. I was in Willowbrook, so close, but I radioed you because you were IC.
Yeah.
So if you need the resources, we can come down right now. But sounded like you guys got it knocked pretty quick. So maybe we can talk about that one.
So that's kind of,
we'll get away from
that. We have a couple of standalone events that kind of happened locally here. So yeah, it was not a lot of action locally, and I don't know. Like, so we were chatting about that. Like, is it because we're not getting a lot of, like, our traffic has been next to nothing coming through town?
It's total travel.
They actually put a travel ban in just to keep people out of the valley, which, like, I do understand sucks for tourism, and there's a lot of people's livelihoods, but, like, we needed our corridor to be open so we can get these resources shuttled around the valley. So,
and hotel rooms for the
Hotel rooms for the people that are coming to respond, and then for evacuees.
Yeah.
So they basically, like, if you were here on vacation, you're out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's something that I haven't seen around here for a long time, or really ever, where, like, they're kicking people out of their hotel rooms, right?
Yeah, it turned into a ghost town.
Yeah, it was really quiet. So, like, we're saying that Q word that you never really say. And then, yeah, we got toned out for a structure fire. So we race over there, have a quick size up, and person's vehicle was home. Parked in the driveway. It was actually somebody that we know. Parked in the driveway. There was some pretty decent smoke coming off the backside of the structure, and there's no real way to get back there. It was fenced off, gated on both sides. Had a quick peek as I got there. I was looking around, and you can see kind of around the backside on the Bravo side. You can kind of look around a bit. Start checking through windows, and you can see, like, it was super smoky outside, and there was some haze on the inside of the structure. Go around to the Delta, and there was a gate or whatever that you could push through. So we got the first crew to push around to the backside as we're trying to gain access to the front. And luckily, what had happened? We have a fire call,
and we're back. So a little quick call. Back in action.
Sir.
Where were we at? We're pretty much going to wrap up for the night, I think. Todd, you were going to mention something?
Yeah, so we're just chatting kind of before we wrap here, just to go back to the wildland fires in the area. So the West Kelowna fire, as it kind of progressed north, went into an area called Wilson's Landing. And the Wilson Landing Fire Department, I just want to say there was 13 out of 24 members lost their homes as well during that fire. And I almost want to say it's a little bit worse for them because they didn't have the time to even grab like a go bag under like an order, because they were out actually in the fire right away from mm-hmm. day one when it first started. So yeah, it sounds like the majority of the members lost literally everything. Mm-hmm. Not to take away from all the other people that lost homes. There's West Kelowna, there's over 200 homes lost, was the count. But just hits you harder when you're the firefighters out there actually trying to help and make a difference. And each and every one of the firefighters stayed on the line, stayed working, and pushed on, including the chief. The chief was one of the members who lost his home.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be lots of stuff, stories and stuff happening over the next few weeks from all this. So we're going to call it a night for now. Mm-hmm. And we'll come back and talk. Maybe get some guys on that were on the fires, yourself included, Todd, obviously. Us. We'll go over all that stuff next week after.
Yeah, a couple of Scott's away for a week, so we may have another off week. Maybe Todd and I can get together.
Yeah.
We'll see how things go, but planning for a bit more in-depth, I think, on the backside of this. We'll kind of break down each fire and what our activity was on each fire.
Right.
And then, maybe some guests we have reached out to, a few people. So we'll try to line that up. I think it'd be pretty interesting to get some other people's perspective.
Yeah,
there's definitely a lot to talk about on multiple fires that we've all been on, so that'll be good.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Shout-outs. First of all, shout-out to Ash for being born today.
Hey! Happy birthday!
Literally today. Yes.
Anyways, that's all you're going to get from us. Ash Modus.
Yeah, Modus. Claim to fame, Snagger Tool. We always chat about that. However, they have so many other products now. Basically, their X line is blowing up. We've been working with them on that. We've got the X pouch, which we've been running. The gloves, your Auto X, we just made a post about that. You guys, Todd, were out there. Oh, coming up right there. Boom. How about that? You guys were out doing some ops and got a couple of photos of them in use, so that's sweet. They got tons of other stuff. We got there. Some of their bags, we use these actually as a bit of a hydrant kit. And we use them for a couple other things. So, we got textiles. They got hard products like their Snagger tools, their force wedges, their soft entry kit. Check them out on their website and their social medias. And DTFF5 gets you 5% off your next order.
Cool. Tell us off. Stop the bleed.
Stop the bleed. Bleeding is bad. Three methods of massive hemorrhage control is tourniquet application, wound packing, and red pressure, and not in that particular order. Make sure you have a good tourniquet, like we say. Make sure it's out of the wrapper. Just go online to stopthebleed.org.ca. Find out if there's any courses near you or instructors. And if you want to be an instructor, go online and they'll tell you how to become one. And check out our YouTube content on the course as well.
Had a little bit of an adrenaline call the other day. We had I don't know if Todd, you heard about this, we had an FR call, came in as a chainsaw accident. And then while I'm driving, because I was right by my house while I was driving, I was thinking, okay, because I have my tourniquet in my pocket, obviously. It's going to go direct. And as I'm looking at the CAD, it's like, ooh, it's a 9-year-old chainsaw accident. I'm like, showed up. Luckily, it was not a chainsaw accident. It was actually a machete. Which sounds just about as bad, but it was actually just it was not superficial, definitely did some stitches, but
yeah,
wasn't as bad as it sounded. So just direct pressure, no tourniquet needed. Okay. So stop the bleed, direct pressure.
It's a thing.
Yep. Ash, coffee, drink it.
Drink it, yeah. we have been consuming copious amounts of coffee the last couple of weeks. Wolf Tree Coffee out of Oliver, BC here. They got a bunch of really good blends. We're pretty partial to the initial attack blend, which these three connoisseurs came up with this one-off blend, and it has been getting a ton of traction. It's phenomenal. $2 of every purchase for every pound goes towards the Honor House Society. Definitely support a local to us business, makes an amazing product, and the donation to Honor House Society is just kind of that icing on the cake, which ties it right back into the first responders. So yeah, Wolf Tree Coffee, they're on Facebook, they got their website, they are shipping, so check them out.
Nice. Tanner Olson.
Tanner Olson, country music out of West Coast Canada. I don't know, do you know where they're touring right now, or what are they up to?
Nope.
Yeah.
They're around.
Either way, they are
around. Working a new song.
Yeah, so.
Back Roads? Dirt Rooms? It's not out yet, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for that one. Yeah, we're a huge fan of Tanner. They're all awesome. They played here for us at the 100 year for your department and seminar as well, right, which was one hell of a show. Yeah, they're definitely upcoming. They're kicking ass and taking names here. So, yeah, check them out on all your listening platforms.
They're also playing music. Wild things.
Kicking
and ass. And name taking.
Hey, they got Scott wearing cowboy boots.
Correct.
That's right.
Well, I don't know if it's that.
There's been some influence.
Yeah. Okay. You're all discombobulated now. I think lastly, it's us. So we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube. Check us out on there. Basically, any other social media areas. But yeah, definitely go on those platforms. Give us a like and share and a follow and a thumbs up and a smiley face and a happy sign. I don't know. Give us whatever. A couple of 5 stars. It's late. Any more? Any more, fellas?
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks. Stay safe. Stay DJing.